On this, the latest episode of the Rocklopedia Fake Bandica, we explore the first 10 years of fake music on one of the longest-running comedy shows in television history. That's right, it's our first episode on Saturday Night Live. Sit back and listen to a bunch of failed middle-aged sketch comedians dissect the works of much older, successful sketch comedians. This is the Rocklopedia Fake Bandica. Welcome to the Rocklopedia Fake Bandica, the only podcast that doesn't fake the funk when talking about fake funk. I'm Charles Rempel, and with me as always, it's T. Michael Childs.
A pleasure as always.
And Alan Benson.
Hello, hello.
And today, this is our big first special guest that we've ever had on the podcast. He's a fourth member of the Van Gogh's, and he is probably the most beloved car journalist in the world, as far as I know. From the Autopian.com, it's Jason Torchinski.
Hi, everybody, and thanks for having me, guys. I appreciate it.
He came all the way from 3 miles down the road.
I did.
And in case you're wondering, like, what an auto journalist has to say about bands, Jason, beforehand was telling us about how he knows nothing about music or bands.
Very
or
little.
Fake bands.
Well, yeah. But he does know. There is going to be a podcast later on where he's going to talk all about the vehicles of the fake bands
that we talked about. There's plenty to talk about there.
That is coming up.
There's a lot.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
It's going to be a good time.
Save it.
I'll save it. It's good stuff.
We got to, you know, we only have like an 8 or 9 of these things. We got to save these things, everything. But so, you know, this was about the point of the Rockabilly when I figured we've talked enough about us, we could just get right into it. But since this is about sketch comedy, about Saturday Night Live, I think we kind of have to talk a little bit about our group, the Van Gogh's. And in fact, Jason, because Jason's here, our first name of the group was, in fact, Jason and Friends.
Jason Friends, right.
So it's so nice that Jason gets to be on the podcast and Friends.
It feels good. We were, our first gig was because it was to play for students who were too sad and pathetic to go home. Their families didn't love them enough to bring them home over the holidays.
For Easter holidays.
So we played a gig in a basement. And then we just skyrocketed from there. We're huge.
It was in April of 1982.
If you start
at UNC, and
if you start in the basement, the only place to go is up.
If I remember correctly, we set up the fire alarm when we left.
We did, yes. Yeah. And then the next show was in a sub basement. Shit, T. Mike.
Damn it!
It didn't work out. No, damn. No, and then we had a
decade long run from there.
We did. Then we moved to LA. Played all the big clubs in LA, and we were just before the internet video boom, so we missed, you know, everything was hard.
Everything was difficult. We were still in the buffering
era.
It was not reliable.
YouTube. We didn't have TikTok.
We didn't have Instagram. We were very early in the scene with our website, VGG.com.
We were one of the first comedy websites of all time.
And U.S. News and World Report, the definitive marker, the definitive source for what's funny in the world, gave us what we were number 3 behind the Onion and
McSweeney's.
McSweeney's,
but it wasn't. Yeah. But I don't think it was ranked. They just named. We would have been number 1 probably.
Definitely.
as far as I read the article, I think that's right. It is alphabetically ordered.
It is funny we talk about this review with such scorn, yet we've brought it up in, I think, every podcast that we were mentioning U.S. News and World Report.
I'm not scornful at all. I'm going to mention
No. When you get mentioned in U.S. News and World Report, man,
Dentist's office waiting room level magazine right there.
Yeah.
I mean, but yeah, we've toured the muffler shop.
So we were the goofus and gallon of comedy is what you're saying?
Absolutely, wow. Alan.
So yeah, we toured all over North Carolina, up and down the East Coast. We had festivals in Austin, Texas, and Seattle that we went to.
We played DC or suburban DC.
Yeah, we won the Hollywood Ha Ha Festival
right.
one year.
Oh, that's right.
The inaugural Hollywood Festival. About that.
That's right.
Was that the first Hollywood Ha Ha Festival?
Yeah, I believe everyone talks about it now.
Yes,
exactly.
They might have just said, you know what, we've reached the pinnacle. Why do anymore?
We played the Academy Award Theater.
Yes, we did.
Right. We did. It's just the one that they use for like the other awards that don't get on TV. But still, they had like
Best Boying. Yeah,
they had like statues, like the gold statue guy.
Yeah, we practiced. We were right between them. And everything. Mm-hmm. So, what are like some more of the highlights? What do you think highlights that we had?
That time I took too many shrooms at the Seattle Festival is a highlight. And then remember the time that after Passover, I was supposed to do stand-up before, but I had just started to eat ate pizza right before we started, and I was shitting my brains out in the bathroom.
That was, in fact, the Hollywood
High. That was the Hollywood High.
Okay, yeah. Now that's a personal highlight and high for you. I'd like to make it more inclusive everybody. Of the group as a whole.
I think the inclusive thing was the person we were eating pizza with was the woman who was the heroine of the first Nightmare on Elm Street movie. And also was in Just the Ten of Us.
And she desperately did not want one of our t-shirts, but we forced upon her anyway.
And she is so famous that I cannot remember her name for the life of me.
But well, I felt like there was some sort of computer around us.
I know, yes. But I can't.
It's a lot to Google.
I'm too busy flapping my lips to Google.
Didn't we actually meet Del Close, the famous improv guy, and the
I think we met him.
You guys
had a class with him.
Yeah,
he was not impressed. Austin.
Yeah, I think because it was at the Improv Festival when he was doing classes and stuff.
We did not see that.
He didn't like us as much as Heather Langenkamp. Thank you, Sergey Brin. He was Google, right?
I think so.
I think so. Yeah.
Google or Next Step.
She was very nice to us, though.
She was super great,
and I super feel bad about super forcing that t-shirt on her.
Yeah, she's still probably pissed.
She could probably just throw them away.
She probably just left it at the restaurant, you know.
Yeah. Were we at a restaurant?
Yeah. Huh. At a pizza place across from the venue, right.
Yeah.
That was around the time, it was possibly a little after, that she was inducted into the Fangoria Chainsaw Hall of Fame.
You don't say.
Mom.
How about that?
Yeah, we had a hell of a career.
Alan's on the Wikipedia again.
Yes. Yes. Anyone want to know what her signature looks like? It's on here. She got some of her checks.
How tall is she?
It does not say, actually.
It doesn't say. I thought that's what it was for.
She's Scorpio?
It's at Wikipedia. It's like, you know, taking out height.
Tell me about it. All right. So, but you know.
All right. Enough about the show?
Enough about our failed sketch comedy. Let's talk about probably was one of our biggest influences to getting into sketch comedy is Saturday Night Live.
Oh, sure.
I mean. We could probably name a whole bunch of other ones, but Saturday Night Live definitely was up there for me. And this was the time period when I started getting into it, the first 10 years. Although for me, I kind of missed the original cast.
See, I didn't actually get into it till the next 10 years, really. That was like, I was looking at the people and it was like after the big, the mass firing of around 84 or something. 85 was when I first started watching.
Let's define this for everybody. Just so, okay, what year did it Saturday Night Live start?
1975.
75.
Yeah.
So we're talking about the 1975 to 85, that period.
Okay.
I think you're talking about the next year, 85, 86, Anthony Michael Hall and Robert Downey Jr. Right.
That was the year that I remember really watching. The only thing I remember watching from the original one, because I was a little kid, was Mr. Bill.
Yeah.
Which was not an original thing, but he was like the little short films that came in like the second or third year and they ran for a while.
Right.
But I remember watching Mr. Bill thinking that was really funny. Watch some on YouTube and doesn't really hold up. I mean, you kind of get the joke pretty quickly. And that's what I think that it was something that I remember we were talking a couple weeks ago about. You know, it was a very different show than it was now.
They just beat the crap out of a little claymation guy, right?
Yeah.
But it was the early years of this, no mation. It was just clay.
The early years of the show was a very different kind of show than it is now. So people who only know it from the last few years, you know,
It was like we were talking about last year in People Magazine. Jane Curtin mentioned that she was rewatching the shows with her family, and that she just realized they're just not funny anymore. She said, "If I'm a quote, I think that it was just one of those you had to be there moment things." That's what happens with live TV and with topical TV. It gets dated after a while. Remember, this was almost 50 years ago, but after we rewatched, I was like, that really wasn't a very good show. It was terrible. Right? Those were her words. But I mean, it was like totally different from what was on there.
And that's from Kate or possibly Allie who's saying that. I mean, again, that's something that like, I mean, this is sort of like the person who got into Paul McCartney when he in Wings, like I only knew her from after SNL. And so that was a surprise to find out that she was on there and to see some of the stuff. It is very improv-y.
She was with Tyne Daly in Kate and Allie, right? Or am I thinking of
Cagney and Lacey?
I was going to say,
Sharon Glass.
Sharon Glass.
I was going to say, you have a... Oops. Yeah.
Was she Hardcastle?
And Ali
or was she
something?
McCormick?
She was Jake and the Fat Man, both. She was both Jake and the Fat Man, actually.
She was Simon, not Simon, is what she was. So okay. But so Jane Curtin is one of the original five, and who was there for the first 5 years. Yeah. Do you think you could name the original cast members, the people who were in the first 5 years?
Garrett Morris.
We have Garrett Morris.
Oh, yeah.
Jane Curtin is what we mentioned. Yeah.
John Belushi.
Bill Murray.
He was not in the...
In the first five. That's what I said. So I'm going to give you the first five.
Chevy Chase.
He was in the first year.
George Coe.
Chevrolet.
George Coe,
you may know as Tolf Deer from Skyrim.
No.
Or no, Woodhouse from Archer.
Alan's done some research on this, thinking I was going to quiz you.
Yeah. No, I was curious to see if there was anyone. I thought I could actually name them all. And I saw this. I was like, George Coe, and then realized he was Woodhouse on Archer. And that's actually, and he also did voices for Skyrim. And so that was actually where I'd ever heard of him. But I guess apparently I went down a whole rabbit hole. He was hired because they wanted someone more established.
Right.
And like kind of to play like old guy roles because they were all fairly young. And so they hired him and he was an actual real actor. And he only lasted like one or two. I mean, he was in a few.
He was only credited as a cast member, I think, for the first episode.
Oh, wow.
And then from there, he like had bit parts. But yeah, he was just, he was not.
Gilda Radner?
Oh, yeah. Definitely.
Gilda Radner.
Oh.
Okay, you had Belushi. What about, there's.
Aykroyd.
Oh, Aykroyd, yeah.
You can't have Belushi with Aykroyd, man.
Let's say Nathan Lane. He should have been in there.
Lorraine Newman.
That's who I was thinking of earlier. Yeah.
Lorraine Newman. Jane Curtin, we talked about. Okay. Well, so I'll go through the list here. John Belushi, Dan Aykroyd, Gilda Radner, Lorraine Newman, Jane Curtin, Chevy Chase, Garrett Morris, George Coe, Michael O'Donohue.
Oh, right.
Well, he was more on the writing side. Mr. Mike. But you're right. He did perform some.
He did some really creepy.
Yeah, Mr. Mike stuff.
Not really funny. There's unsettling stuff.
His whole thing was to be unsettling, I think.
And then Bill Murray. And then at the very end of the 5 years, Harry Shearer.
Harry Shearer, a giant.
He's been in the cast twice. Yeah. The first 5 years and then the second 5 years. He was not part of the cast. He was like somebody who came in and did.
I'm gonna jump in with one more person that I think kind of counts, and that's Paul Schaefer. Now he was more the music guy, but who was playing piano for Murray, Bill Murray's Nick the Lounge Singer character. Who is it? Paul Schaefer. I mean, he was kind of crossing over from the music side to the acting side at the same time.
I'll allow it.
Thank you very much.
When did he jump ship over to Letterman?
It was probably when Letterman started.
Yeah.
When was that?
Probably about the 80s.
Early 80s, right?
Yeah, I think so. But yeah, I mean, just going back to what Jane Curtin was saying, my father-in-law was obsessed with the Chibaga sketch. He would quote it. And actually, when we were in Chicago, we took pictures of the place that has it. It has like the big cheeseburger, you know, chip thing. And Jamie was like, my wife had grown up hearing these like references, never actually seen the show. We watched it and she watched the episode and she's like, when does it get funny?
That's not what it was about.
Yeah, it was very improv-y. It was very much like we're getting dig into the characters and kind of, but it's like watching it now is like, yeah, boy, there's like, it really could have like juiced this up a little bit because it really is. It's kind of like watching some Greeks working. And
it was totally different than what was on TV before.
Yeah.
I mean, you got guys, you know,
you were not allowed to show Greeks working on television.
No, not at all.
Like it was all kinds of rules against that.
And then once they did this, that brought us Balky from Perfect Strangers.
And then you could find
a straight line
of Greek working. Exactly, yeah. And then then we got Balky.
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
And then from there,
all right, let me mark off Perfect Strangers. Got that reference. Okay. But I mean, I guess the reason why we're here is to talk about fake bands, and so we probably should talk about probably the biggest fake band of this time from Saturday Night Live, which is
the Blues Brothers.
The Blues Brothers.
How early were the Blues Brothers in the Like, how soon, like, what year did they show up?
I think it was 78.
78?
I have to double check.
And the movie, when did their movie come out?
It was 80. That was 1980, yeah.
80. So they had a couple years of gestating. And how often did they show up on Saturday Night Live? Like, how regular were
who invited this guy?
What do you want? What's with all the questions, mister?
I don't know. You guys are the experts.
Well, first we want to talk about, you know, John Belushi played Jake.
Are you sure of that?
And Dan Aykroyd played Elwood Blues.
Why, yeah, yeah, yeah.
They weren't a huge skit as far as I recall. They were just small. They would come in and sing.
No, they were like the musical.
Were they actually? Act. Was there anything funny about them?
No, or that was the point. They weren't. There wasn't really like it was like it wasn't like a funniness thing. It was like we just really liked this kind of, you know, this old time soul blues R&B groove, and they just wanted to do it, and because it was like, as we said, you know, the show. I don't know if that would get, if they could get, you could get away with that kind of thing now if it wasn't like rib ticklingly hilarious.
Like if you try to picture modern Saturday Night Live cast members earnestly doing a musical act, I think people wouldn't really know what to do.
Exactly.
Well, right.
What's interesting is because they did have their roots in another fake band, which I guess you're going to probably talk about next, the Killer Bees. It spun out of them playing an early in 76. They were the Howard Shore and his all B band play I'm a King Bee by Slim Harpo. And so they were playing like a real blues song.
Well, I'm a King Bee. I want you to be my queen. Yeah. I'm a King Bee, baby.
Dressed in bee suits. And then I guess. They thought that could, you know, kind of go along. Then they ended up opening a couple years later. They opened the show. This is like, I guess, like a fake musical guest, or maybe they were the musical guest. I can't remember.
I don't think they were. I think, but sometimes they would have like numbers that would come up, kind of thing. The Blues Brothers were them, and then from there, said, "Hey, let's make a movie."
Well, they made an album first.
They did.
Yeah, they actually had like an album before the movie came out that did decent.
I think it was the number one album in the country when the movie came out.
Yeah, well, by that, yeah, but I mean, like, it came out before, so I think the movie, you know, you got synergy there.
So have we lost something because it seems so strange now? Because the Blues Brothers movie's fantastic. I think
it really is. It's a tour de force.
It's a fantastic movie, and it happened because it was okay for these two comics on a show to earnestly do a musical act, and everybody thought that would be fine. And now today, I don't know if we would do that, and maybe we're missing out on the next...
But I think also because the Hollywood has moved from cocaine to other drugs. And so they don't have that like kind of vibrant, yes, I'll do your movie. That sounds great.
So you want more earnest comedy is what I'm hearing.
Well, this wasn't even comedy. It was just earnest. They were earnest about, they wanted to do something other than the job they were hired for. Like you hire some exactly electricians and they think, you know what, we're gonna paint a mural instead, and you're like, fuck it, paint the mural, and then it turns out to be Guernica or something amazing like that. Like that's kind of what happened there, but with more cocaine.
Yeah, but you're right on both counts, I think, especially the cocaine.
Now, but okay, so Blues Brothers, it is a fake band. Do we call the Killer Bees a fake band? I mean, I think they performed, right?
They performed.
I know they were in other sketches as the Killer Bees.
Well, they didn't start as the band, but they did the song, and so that instance of it. I think you would go with the as a sort of yes, but not all the
time.
Did
the Blues Brothers perform before they went on Saturday Night Live, you think? Did
No.
No,
they no, it came out of the show.
Came out of the show.
Oh yeah, totally came out.
They didn't do like Belushi and Aykroyd didn't just do this on their own.
I think, and you know, of course, you got to remember they've got like a top-notch backing band on the show.
Sure.
For the musical, you know, for just doing the show, the theme songs and everything, the theme song and the music for the
show. Were they good musicians, Aykroyd and Belushi?
Aykroyd was, actually. He's actually played a lot of blues and stuff.
So he has,
I don't know about Belushi.
Does he play an instrument?
I think he actually does play the harmonica.
Harmonica in the movie.
It is exciting stuff.
So yeah, so glorified karaoke to start with, but they turned it into a really excellent movie.
Huh.
Possibly the best Saturday Night Live spinoff movie. Anybody want to fight me about it?
Are you forgetting about Night at the Roxbury? Oh God, it's Pat.
Well, Wayne's World.
Not fly today.
Yeah.
None of that.
Yeah. You got Wayne's World.
Wayne's World's a strong contender.
Very, yeah.
I think Blues Brothers is better than Wayne's World.
It's a strong contender, but I got to give it to the Blues Brothers.
Hmm. Did the church lady ever get a movie?
Not yet, but he's sure still alive.
Don't count out the Coneheads movie.
Was that a movie, wasn't it?
Yeah, that's true.
And actually, in true Van Gogh style, they really hammered that, like, right when the iron was hot, about, like, 15 years after they were on the show. It's like, I don't know why they...
Well, there was actually a Coneheads animated series as well.
Really?
Ooh. Yeah.
When?
Between the skits and the movie, but I don't know when.
Wow.
So that's helpful.
Lasted almost a week.
And of course, there were other Blues Brothers movies, or at least one other one. But
we shouldn't talk about it.
Let's not mention that one.
There was Blues Brothers 2000.
We hit the highs and the lows, and one's media property.
John Goodman did
John
the
Goodman.
Replace,
yeah.
John Belushi, and yeah. I think there was a third one. Might be a fourth one or something.
Must have bought a boat.
A check is a check, right?
Yeah.
So that was, you know, Belushi and Aykroyd. Gilda Radner had her own fake band, or her singer was Candy Slice.
Yes.
Candy Slice and the Slicers.
Candy Slice and the Slicer.
And I think we have a clip.
So that was her homage to punk rock in general and Patti Smith in particular, isn't it?
Yeah.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Okay. She looks
very much Patti Smith.
You can kind of see Gilda Radner, Patti Smith made in the same factory. Kind of.
Yeah. Yeah.
She did play the celebrity benefit concert Rock Against Yeast, I believe. Is that right?
I swear that has got to be one of the best comedy parodies of all times up there, except for what was the other one that Saturday Night Live? The Free Range Chickens.
Oh, Musicians for Free Range Chickens. I can still sing that song. Yeah. You know, it gets stuck in my head for days.
I think those.
What was it? Sing some of it.
that's in the second decade.
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
I can't sing that now.
Was this Rock Against Yeast? Was this an anti yeast infection?
Yeah. Yeah. Okay.
Good. No one likes a yeast infection.
I mean, it was. This was a character that she's done. She did many times. She did many times on her special as well. I think. It was nice to see a hard rocking punk lady out there, you know, especially because the show dominated a lot with men and everything.
Yeah,
so it's
very
nice
much
that
so.
She got to focus on this character. Hmm. Yeah. Now, when Bill Murray joined, he has probably my favorite fake band of this time, Nick the Lounge Singer.
Ah, Star Wars, nothing but Star Wars. Give me the Star Wars. Don't let them in.
Thing about Nick is his last name changed constantly.
Oh, really?
So I'm going to quiz you here, if I may. I'm going to tell you where he performs. And you have to tell me what his name is.
Oh, Jesus.
And you might think of a better name that might work.
Okay.
Okay.
So, ready? The Breezy Point Lodge at Lake Minnehunka.
That's Bear Cuddler.
Nick Bear Cuddler?
Bear Cuddler.
Nick Bear Cuddler?
Forrest.
Nick Forrest? That's a good guess.
It sounds very Midwestern. I'm going to think something Swedish, maybe. Perfelson.
Nick Summers.
Summers.
Because of a summer camp, I guess.
Oh, okay.
Here's another one. The Powder Room on Meatloaf Mountain.
Oh, Nick. I think it was one. Nick Winters.
Nick Winters. Very good.
Oh, were they all seasons?
Thematic, though.
Not all of them. Oh. The Sand Strip North Oasis.
Now, Sands is too obvious.
Buttersmacker.
Nope, it was Nick Sands.
Ah! I out-thought myself.
The auto train headed for Orlando.
Nick Cars?
No.
Horse Fondler.
Nick Trains.
Train.
Nick Rails.
Rails.
Nick Rails.
Right.
The Trans Eastern Airlines VIP Lounge.
Something aircrafty?
Yeah, it gotta be.
The Earhart.
Nick Hart?
Nick Wings. Nick Wings. The Cape Farval, an early warning base.
Nick Radar.
Nick Borealis.
Oh, Borealis.
Oh, that's really good.
Nice.
At the Trader Nick's, a Buffalo area Polynesian bar.
Tiki slurb.
Nick Lava.
Lava.
Anyway, so
wow.
Every place he'd go,
yeah,
his name would change everything, but it's still Nick the Lounge with Paul Schaefer.
Paul Schaefer.
That's right.
Who would occasionally get a word or two of dialogue.
I mean, so that was one of the recurring characters that just kept going. You know, they could always just parody the songs that are coming out. You know, the little cheesy kind of
thing. The one who sang the Star Wars theme song?
Yeah. He gave it lyrics.
If
it lyrics.
They should Star Wars.
Star Wars in the sky. Something.
If they should bar wars, please let these Star Wars stay.
Good
times.
Yeah. And then, of course, then that we had the nerds.
I don't remember them at all.
You remember the nerd sketches?
Vaguely.
Where you had Gilda Radner and Bill Murray playing just like the...
Yeah, Lisa Loepner and Todd DeLaMuca.
That's correct.
Character names.
Well, they
I think
actually,
I get them confused with the Whiners. Didn't they do a Whiner sketch?
That was later. That's Joe Piscopo.
That was Joe Piscopo.
But this was the nerds. They originally started as a fake band. So the sketch, the nerds were being interviewed on the radio to promote their new album, which was called Trying Desperately to Be Liked, with such songs as I'll Give You My Lunch Money, I Can't Help It If I Have Egg Salad on My Retainer, and Let My Head Out of the John, and I'll Give You Tomorrow's Lunch Money.
This is a different conception of a nerd, one that I think is sort of gone today.
Is it?
To some degree. This kind of, I think there's less bullying among kids now.
Oh, definitely, yeah.
So, like, I can't remember.
Thank God.
Like, when was the last swirly actually delivered to a deserving child?
I think it was 2007.
2007.
Was there ever
Tucson, Arizona.
Yeah.
Child.
What's that?
Was it ever truly deserved?
Oh, definitely. 100%.
Someone's earning one right now.
Yeah.
So, from the research I did, that this the nerd started because... It was based on Elvis Costello.
Yeah, they
really.
Yeah,
yeah. The writer of the sketch wanted to just thought that Elvis Costello was like the nerdiest looking rock star she had ever seen, and just thought that was a whole funny conceit. So
made a real band.
Another fake band, though, right? Elvis Costello.
Wait a minute.
Is that not?
He was in Talladega Nights.
He does play one.
I thought that's where he.
Was he in Talladega Nights?
He was in Talladega Nights. He and Mos Def were at the home of
the
French.
What's his name? I can't remember. I just watched that the other day. Underrated movie, I think. Talladega Nights. It's fun.
Yeah, but Elvis Costello actually has a role as a fake artist in a different movie called Americathon.
Oh, I know Americathon. Oh, that's right, where everybody lived in their cars. And yes. I think John Ritter was there.
Yep. John Ritter's president of the United States.
Fellow aortic dissection victim.
Oh, really?
That's how he died, actually.
Oh.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah, that's right.
Are we just assuming?
You would have known, T-Mike, if you came to visit me in the hospital.
Are we just assuming that the only people listening to our podcast are friends of us who know that you had
aortic dissection? I'm throwing it out there. This is my little PSA. Don't get an aortic dissection. There you go. That's
Here's
my PSA.
If you feel something pop in your chest and you hear it,
call
911 immediately.
Yeah, don't wait around.
Google search. Oh, what is pop in chest mean?
Yeah,
don't think about cleaning out the cache on your computer.
Just delete the apps you don't want anyone to find, because you can do that with one hand while you're clutching your chest. And then call the ambulance.
You can search for this. And let the doctors make that. You don't have to let WebMD say it.
Yeah.
Of an aortic dissection.
I remember Americathon.
Well, there are plenty of fake bands in that. I know we'll cover it at some point. So those were the major fake bands of this time period of the original cast. There were a few that were a little smaller that I'm just going to throw out there. One was called Rhonda Weiss and the Rondettes.
Yeah, another Gilda Radner one.
That's right. This is a girl group. She was Rhonda Weiss, and the Rondettes were Jane Curtin, Lorraine Newman. And that week's musical guest, Linda Ronstadt.
Ooh. Oh, wow. Was she part of the fake band?
She was. They sang their song Goodbye to Saccharin, because I guess people thought that it was,
going to get
causing
banned.
Cancer, and it was going to ban.
Right. This was the pre-equal aspartame era, I guess. Saccharin was your only option. So it was a big deal, worth singing about.
Another fake band this time was the Young Caucasians.
Oh.
They were a parody of the 1950s kind of white bread acts that cover black music. This was on the episode that was hosted by Ray Charles, where they sang his hit, What I'd Say. So they probably just totally murdered that.
Right.
Yeah. There's another one, Los Vietolos Cubanos, a Cuban Beatles cover band for a commercial parody where they sing such Beatles hits as Yesterday, Resolution, and Norwegian World. So you kind of can just see where that's,
where that's going, that that's one. Going
Yesterday.
That one. Now, I do want to get again, I asked before in another episode, I want to get make sure they're brilliant. There was these episodes with Bill Murray, Shower Mike with Richard Herkimer, where he was doing a show in his shower with one of the little fake little soap mics.
I remember those.
And he was bringing his wife. And then sometimes he'd bring outside guests who would come in like fully clothed into the shower. So
this was a recurring.
They did it at least twice that I know.
Yeah.
Of.
Just as an aside, do you guys remember in that late 70s, early 80s period how popular carved soap things were?
Oh, yeah. On a rope.
On a rope.
Soap they were on a rope.
But like I remember the fake mics on a rope.
Oh, yeah.
I believe I had a pig on a rope that was soap.
It made a quality gift for somebody who you didn't know much about.
Yeah, and you didn't care to know anything about it. You just knew they probably should bathe.
Exactly. Yeah. Everybody should bathe. Let's get them some soap. It's not rope soap. It looks like an iguana.
What was the point of the rope? So you don't drop it?
Yeah. It's made it easier. And you're always dropping the soap in the shower. It's slippery.
And that's what they it was practical. Don't drop the soap, right?
Yeah.
Although I think that was more for prison.
It's generally for prison.
They didn't give those out in prison.
No.
Maybe they should have.
Maybe. But it's prison culture. Who are we to judge?
Well, okay. So then there's also a fake band that was not part of the cast that came in. And this is from T-Mike's favorite group of all time, the Ruddles.
Definitely on my Mount Rushmore of fake bands, the Ruddles.
Although I tell you, no, they should not definitely be the top.
All right. We'll argue about this in the Ruddles episode. We'll hash this out.
Really?
We'll talk about this. Yeah. But so T-Mike, why don't you tell us about Ron Nasty? What he did.
Okay, so the whole Ruddles thing was interesting because it took off from the original Eric Idle of the Monty Python got his own solo show after Python called Rutland Week in Television, where they pretended to be broadcasting out of the England's tiniest, cheapest station. And so one of the things that Neil Innes, the music guy for Monty Python, did, because he was on the same show with Neil, is he just threw together a quick Beatles parody, and they called the band the Ruddles because it was Rutland, named after an actual area of Great Britain. So they put together and they shot a video to make it look like the Hard Day's Night era. And then that went over okay in England. You know, it was just a clip in part of the show. So then though they brought it over and put it on, played it on the Saturday Night Live. Because Lorne Michaels had gone on air and offered the Beatles the fantastic sum of $3,000, I believe, to reunite on Saturday Night Live.
Let the record show that T-Mike held up five fingers when he said 3,000.
Something. It was about this many fingers of money.
What would that be in today's dollars?
That would be at easily $3,000.
Easy.
What about in today's fingers?
Yeah.
I mean, finger inflation is out of control these days. You need like two hands worth of fingers just for one finger now.
I got to confess something to you about the Ruddles, T-Mike.
Oh?
I thought they were named after the act of rutting, or the slang term rutting for animals fucking.
No, but that's part of the gag, though, is that it is vaguely, unsavory.
Well, there is a town, Rutland, isn't there?
Yeah, it's an actual district.
Which is
district.
Like the smallest kind of, I think if I remember correctly, it's the smallest market in England. It's the smallest TV station possible.
Yeah, exactly. That was part of the gag.
So in the Eric Idle episode where he was hosting, there was one, they had a, I believe it was a telethon to raise money for Great Britain.
Yes.
And that's when they brought in Ron Nasty.
Who was one of the Ruddles.
Cheese and Onions.
Yes. Which was,
Which T-Mike covered.
What?
Didn't T-Mike cover Cheese and Onions?
Oh
that's in true. College? T-Mike did make a cover video parody of that.
Sure. I didn't cover it or anything. I just lip synced to a video on my college TV station because that's how deep this fake band stuff runs in my blood.
Wow.
We might have to dig up a clip of that and put it up somewhere for people to see.
Yeah, people.
You say
yeah,
might. No. We definitely have to.
Yeah, no.
We have to get the sleuths on that.
Anyway, there's no. Fortunately, there's no audio. It's just me lip syncing. So.
Yes.
We take a quick break?
We probably should. We've been talking a lot about this first five. We got right. Another whole 5 years to go here. All right, so when we come back, the second half of the first decade of Saturday Night Live, out with the old cast and in with the new, here at the Rocklopedia Fake Bandica. So after the first 5 years of the show, there's a big upheaval to end all big upheavals. Due to exhaustion and infighting and problems with the NBC suits, Lorne Michaels leaves the show he created. The whole cast leaves to pursue movies and TV shows not named SNL. All the writers leave. The only person that remains as a writer and a bit player is Brian Doyle Murray. Huh.
And this was the weird nepotism era. Because this was also when Peter Aykroyd was on the show around this era. And then also...
Peter Aykroyd?
Yeah, I believe it was Peter Aykroyd. It was his brother. Yeah. And then he was on like one or two episodes, I think.
Or maybe he was in the first 5 years?
I believe so,
yeah. I don't think he was in the second 5 years.
He was in the second 5 years, yeah.
He wasn't.
Oh, okay.
This would be the period they would have had Gallagher 2.
This would be a very Gallagher 2 era. Yeah. This is when the show is now in the hands of Gene Dumanian. And this is when, this is the era I started watching Star Trek.
Right.
This time here.
And also, just to throw in with my last point, Jim Belushi.
Yes.
Jim Belushi was one of the
cast members in the...
Second 5 years.
Yeah. Can we name, how many can you think we can name of these? I'll tell you that there are 22 people listed as cast members.
Oh boy.
In this 5 year span.
Tim Kazurinsky era, right?
Oh, Kazurinsky.
Eddie Murphy, come on.
Eddie Murphy.
Is Billy Crystal in this era?
Billy Crystal, yeah. He is. He is in the year 10.
Okay, well, then, Joe Piscopo.
Joe Piscopo.
There was that, those two guys that I was getting mixed up, Charles Rocket and Gary Kroger.
Oh, Charles Rocket.
Kind of like both of them. Good-looking white dudes.
Gary Kroger.
Charles Rocket was supposed to be the new Chevy Chase.
Yeah. Didn't he swear on TV or something, fired?
He did. In the Who Shot Charles Rocket. Because it was Charlene Tilton. Was she from Dallas?
Yeah, I think so.
Sure.
They did a, you know, Who Shot JR parody. Who Shot?
Okay.
And at the very end, they asked him who he thought did it. I think he said, I'd like to fucking know or something like that. Or who the fuck knows or something like that. Just like
the other. Brad Hall.
Brad Hall, yes.
And Rich Hall.
Rich Hall. Sniglets fame.
Yeah. Christopher Guest did a lot of stuff with Billy Crystal.
Julia Louis-Dreyfus.
Julia Louis-Dreyfus, that's right.
Hard to believe now.
Terry Sweeney, no. Was Terry Sweeney?
Terry Sweeney was later.
Gilbert Gottfried.
Gilbert Gottfried.
Oh, Gilbert Gottfried.
That's right.
He was the last year, I think, before everyone got fired, wasn't it? Or
he was one of the, no, he was on the earlier.
Oh.
He was one of the first, the new cast. And in fact, I read that it was down between Gilbert Gottfried and Paul Reubens for this.
Oh, really?
And they went with Gilbert Gottfried.
Wow.
And Paul Reubens said...
Honestly, can't lose with either of them.
Over and over again, he said it was because Gilbert Gottfried knew somebody. That's how he got the job over him.
I remember reading something about this guy, Jim Downey, and I found this thing. He was... I think he was credited during this period, but he was just like a featured player, maybe, but he wrote for it until like the 2000s. Like,
right.
Yeah, but he was actually
a cast member.
He was credited at one point, I think, on screen. They said he actually counted as being like having been credited on one show or something, but he might have been like one of those featured players at the end. But I remember, but he wrote for like 30 years or something on this show.
Wow.
Yeah, it was pretty amazing.
All right, let me see the people we didn't name here. Denny Dillon. We didn't mention Denny Dillon.
Robin Duke.
Robin Duke. And who was the other, like, there was another...
Terry Sweeney was in Mary Gross.
That's what I was thinking.
Haven't we already talked about Terry Sweeney?
Maybe.
Mary Gross was there. Okay.
Mary Gross.
Gail Mathias?
Not right.
Ann Risley?
Gail Mathias.
Nora Dunn, was she later also?
She was later as well.
All right.
Gail Mathias actually has another fake band connection.
Whoa.
So she... voiced the Cindy Crawford parody on the animated Tick show.
Oh.
And then Mindy Mulford. And then also on the animated Tick show was Arthur was voiced by
Oh.
Mickey Dolenz.
He
was a monkey.
And probably also a Ruddle, since everything's about the Ruddle.
Everything comes about the Ruddle. Tony Rosado.
No, yeah, I don't remember that at all.
Christine Ebersole.
Vaguely, I remember that
name. We talked about her, I think, in another show, because she's not related to Dick Ebersole, which was the only thing I know about her.
Let's see. Harry Shearer again.
Oh, Harry Shearer.
I even told you that.
Yeah,
Martin
you did.
Short.
Oh, Martin Short. I love Martin Short.
Yes. Well, this is I thought he was a little later, but okay, yeah.
No, this was he was in this, this, was this group, and Pamela Stevenson.
Pamela Stevenson.
Martin Short.
Yes. Yeah. I mean, that was year 10. That was, you know.
You know what? I just read something about Martin Short today or yesterday. Apparently, he had to come out and deny rumors that he and Meryl Streep are a couple, which I think would make a fantastic couple.
Well, they were a couple in Only Murders in the Building.
Oh, is that why? See, I never see the show. I thought it just was kind of coming out of nowhere.
I mean, they were a very believable, kind of sweet couple.
Well, that's where that's from. Yeah. All right.
But I don't know. Maybe people saw something afterwards with them. Maybe. They were.
Yeah. Maybe.
Hopefully.
Because they were boning in a cab. They got caught. That's what I heard.
Could be.
We apologize for the eating on microphone here.
They're just M&Ms. T-Mike's doing a cutthroat motion on his neck.
All right, so you guys did a great...
What should I not be doing, T-Mike?
The things that you're doing, don't.
What do you mean? I don't understand.
You guys did a great job with that. It makes me think you studied, so I really should quiz you on who's on Saturday Night Live now. You guys think you could name even three people on Saturday Night Live?
What's his name? The guy?
Bowen Yang, very good.
There's the woman who she does. She's
that good-looking guy, and then the other guy who does the news with him.
Oh yeah, Michael Che and Colin Jost.
There you go.
Which one's the good-looking guy to you?
Michael Che.
Just wondering.
There's that Sarah.
That's three.
Sarah, what's her face?
Sarah Sherman. She's a nut. Have you seen her?
I don't know.
She's
crazy. Is she?
She's hilarious.
Very funny.
Yeah. Okay, you forgot Kenan Thompson. He's been there for
He's been there forever.
Forget them. All right, I'm going to tell you who was on there. Michael Che, Mikey Day, Andrew Dismukes, Chloe Fineman, Heidi Gardner, James Austin Johnson, Punky Johnson, Colin Jost, Egon Woden, Sarah Sherman, Kenan Thompson, Bowen Yang, and featured Marcelo Hernandez, Molly Kearney, Michael Longfellow, Chloe Trost, and Devin Walker.
They got a Punky.
They do.
Wow. It's amazing.
Yeah, do you guys don't watch Saturday Night Live right now anymore?
I see clips of it from things occasionally.
It's on awful late at night for someone my age.
That's why I have Peacock. So I can watch it the next day. But we don't care about that right now.
No, we're still talking about the first 10 years.
Episodes and episodes to get to that one. We're just talking about, this is years 6 through 10 here. This is the brand new
hold
one.
On, guys. I got a text from T-Mike that says, no eat, no drink. Mics are picking it up. What should I do about that?
Just ghost him on that one.
Yeah, it's just.
He'll never know.
So, second.
I'll do the new phone who dis.
Right. So, let's talk about some of the fake bands here. Well, the one that to this day still gets stuck in my head is Buckwheat.
Oh yeah, Buckwheat. I remember that sketch
sings.
Well.
That album, Buckwheat Sings. I mean, seriously. Yeah. It'll be mowing the lawn or something. I'll just start going, your aunt's eyes, the times are made. I mean, this was, you know, our gang, Little Rascals kind of thing.
Right.
Which must have been, 60 years or so, 50 years before?
Yeah, let's see. So if this was in the early 80s,
Yeah, it was from the 30s.
Good 50 years.
But it was reference and everything. Now, I guess because of syndication and stuff.
It was reran to death, absolutely.
But yeah, it's like.
Which is why they could make fun of it.
If somebody was doing a Fred Sanford character now, you know. But do kids get that kind of
thing? I don't think they would.
Would kids know who Buckwheat is now? We're talking 100 years ago.
This is still the issue with there was just less media. So people who are watching Saturday Night Live, the odds of them having grown up watching Little Rascals was huge compared to the odds of that now. Well, because there was garbage on. We had to watch all kinds of.
Yeah, we had to watch the garbage because that's all there was.
Just on whatever it was on.
That or go outside.
But it was also a completely different media landscape in the sense of how it was structured because, there was this huge incentive to financial incentive to put out, you know, cheap whatever and dump it on, you know, dump all these old shows on the market. So we had this broad depth of stuff to watch, you know, if you're just, cause you're
garbage.
It was like old garbage that everybody watched. And nowadays, who's watching the old garbage? Is there nobody.
If my show hasn't been made in the past 3 weeks, I don't watch it.
Exactly.
Seriously, there was a movie that came up, it was 2022. I said, no, thank you.
No, black and white things are dead to people.
Other than Small Wonder, that's my rule also. Small Wonder, though, I make the exception.
What about She's the Sheriff? Will you make
No.
But
My 9-year-old actually watches MeTV, so he actually knows we watched the... We were talking about something. I can't remember what I mentioned, and he was like, "Oh, like on that's from Colonel Clink, like from Hogan's Heroes."
Whoa!
Like, how do you know what Hogan's Heroes?
Wow!
He knew. Jamie and I watched the Perry Mason reboot thing on HBO, which was actually really good. But he was like, "Oh, I know Perry Mason." Like,
what?
Wow. I didn't watch Perry Mason when I was 9.
Is he a big fan of Columbo?
I don't know. He's ever seen Columbo.
You should introduce him to Columbo.
Yeah, he knows a lot of.
There are a lot of kids who are into Columbo.
That's what I've heard. Columbo's crazy.
Columbo also has several fake bands in it. There's a punk episode, I believe, which we'll get to later on.
Possibly America's most. The most famous A. Peugeot has ever been in American television.
Now, you know, Buckwheat was a wonderful fake singer on the show, but he also had probably the most televised death on Saturday Night Live history.
Oh, yeah.
Shooting of Buckwheat.
Assassination.
Right.
Alfalfa. Was it Alfalfa who killed him? No. He had no comment.
It was well done. It was just like, because it was about the time Reagan was shot. And they just kept going on and on. How did he die? Let's take a look. And they kept showing it over and over again. It was fantastic.
That's right. Because Alfalfa said he's hurt and confused, and I don't know what to say. No comment. Yeah.
And the other good gag was how, you know, well, what do you know about, you know, the guy who...
John David Stutz.
John David Stutz, who was the assassin.
You think he could shoot buckwheat? Oh, yes.
Yes. Definitely. Oh, yes, definitely.
That's all he ever talked about.
Brilliant.
That's good. That still holds up very well.
You think Jodie Foster would have been impressed by that?
Of John David Stutz?
Shooting buckwheat? She had to be a little impressed when Reagan was shot.
Or was it somebody else that he did it for?
Did it for Jodie Foster?
Hinckley, right?
Yeah.
Because he's seen her in Taxi Driver, I believe. Mm-hmm. And he wanted to impress her, and he was like kind of obsessed with her. So.
Wait, no, you're thinking of the real murder.
The real
murder.
Oh, they were the real murder.
The real assassination attempts. The guy who shot Reagan, the guy who shot buckwheat. I don't know if he cared about George.
I forgot. I'm a guest on the Killopedia fake fake assassin show.
Well, okay. So let's get back to the fake bands, is what I'm hearing.
Oh, well, yes. Okay.
All these people are ornery today.
Well, Eddie Murphy did a great job with Buckwheat, as I think we all agree.
He also did another great fake band. I know your favorite team, Clarence Walker.
Oh, yeah. This is a great sketch.
He was. He was a saxophone player who claimed to be the fifth Beatle.
Oh, right. I remember that. Yeah.
Not only was he an original member, but he wrote all the songs. He had some great saxophone solos, if I remember correctly.
Oh, yeah.
He molded the group, you know, until they just stole his stuff and kicked him out of the band. They used to be called the Clarences.
It originally was the Clarence. Everyone knows the Beatles were actually originally called the Clarences, but they covered it up.
Everybody knows that.
It's a conspiracy.
Exactly. He had the tapes to prove it, though.
I believe it.
It was fantastic.
And I think everybody agrees the Beatles sorely lacked for having no saxophone.
It really was. You could feel the hole left by his absence.
Yeah.
You really could.
When you listen to like the White Album, the one thing you always say is...
Needs more sax.
Needs more sax.
A lot more sax.
Right there. There's just something here.
Yeah.
What could it be?
If Yesterday had like an 8-minute sax solo right in the middle, then it might be a worthwhile song.
Yeah, that might do it. Mm-hmm.
That's why they had the chorus on Hey Jude at the end. It used to just be saxophone until it fades out.
Yeah.
But then they were like, well, we can't use that anymore.
Right.
Let's just do the na-na-na-nas. All right. So here's some other fake bands from this time. Ira Needleman.
The Oral Surgeon.
The Oral Surgeon.
This one I remember very well for some reason.
I'm sure I could sing the whole song.
It was
song
like, Needleman,
right,
I'm an oral surgeon, filling, drilling, or something like that, right? Yeah. My name is Needleman.
And I like Star Trek and Barbra Streisand, and I'm tired of being a virgin.
Come and sit in my chair. Let me put you under.
Get ready for an oral thrill.
You won't feel no pain, but you'll feel the thunder when a
drill. I'm the needle man, and I'm looking forward to the bill.
Drilling,
drilling. Yeah, I'm the needle man, looking forward to the bill.
Drilling,
drilling. Right. This My name is Needleman.
This was back in the day with before dating apps, you actually could go and have a video name.
Oh, that was the conceit of it. I couldn't remember why he
And so,
said.
You know, it's around time with music videos as well. They made a video for the dating service, and so he was telling why people would be interested in him, and he had this whole song about it.
And I think if we have any older viewers or listeners, I guess listeners, I don't know that this was, I mean... This was in a lot of TV shows. I remember there was like multiple TV shows. They talked about making video dating things, but I've never heard of anyone actually doing this.
It was even on The Simpsons with the Beck and the Luck with you, Nessie.
Oh, yeah.
I'm assuming it had to be like a bigger kind of city to actually make it worthwhile.
Yeah, I
don't
think so.
Thing.
Yeah.
Like
yeah.
Smaller towns, it's like you should know everybody who's dateable kind of thing. That if you go to somewhere like New York.
How did they actually work, the video dating services? Like, how did you... You'd sign up to make a video, then you what? Did they send
you
videos,
would watch other videos?
Your video would be there. Like you would go.
You would go
and
to a physical
videos.
Location and just watch
it's
a bunch of
like
tape.
Blockbuster yeah. would be kind of thing, I guess. You go,
but
around
you have to stay there.
I think yeah. so. Yeah, you wouldn't take it with you
unless they let you take copies home.
They wouldn't compile it. I think you just look through all the videos.
You just yeah. it was, that's weird.
It is.
It's like those like you would read about like the Mormon books where they had those binders with the women like that, but videotapes.
What?
You know, like like you didn't hear about this. There was it was like some scandal, and there was even a thing. Was it Mitt Romney? I can't remember somebody.
The only person from Utah you can name is Mitt Romney.
Something in the news that had to do something with binders for women. Somebody
binder,
Google
but that
it.
Was for binders for women, where he was trying to build like
not restraints.
No,
what kind of binders are we talking about?
But his administration.
Yeah, the binders for women was not dating. That was people he was going to hire for his administration.
Didn't you guys ever watch Big Love? I'm pretty sure this was on Big Love.
I'm still confused.
But so it was a music video
yeah.
of this oral surgeon, and there was lots of double entendres about oral surgery and sex. And But yeah, I'm sure I could sing the whole thing. If there's karaoke night with Saturday Night Live people, I think that would be my jam that I'd be singing. Okay, so another fake band here is Ed Grimley.
Martin Short.
He would play the triangle.
Martin Short is interesting because he basically took, it's kind of weird in a way. I don't know if you guys can maybe think of some other examples, but he's an actor who took his characters from show to show. Whatever show he was on, he brought
Jackie
his character.
Rogers Jr. also. Like,
which started on
Who was SCTV. A musician too, sort of, right?
No, yeah. He was a singer, yeah.
Yeah.
He was. Although on Saturday Live, I think he was just a game show host.
The jackpot wad.
No, I think he was, well, I think because he was.
Jackpot
yeah.
wad.
Yeah, on the, on SNL, the it was character. In his back, it was like his backstory, but I don't think he ever performed, did he?
But he did on SCTV, I think.
Yeah, constantly, yeah.
And I think on the game show, he sang the song.
Oh, he sang the theme music.
Sang the theme music.
Jackie
Rogers
Jr. You didn't give him credit for that.
Yeah.
Which again is probably another song that I could just sing. but Ed Grimley, he just plays the triangle. He didn't perform it, does he? Does he count? Is that back
to
where?
In SCTV, he actually did have an album.
Okay.
SCTV, he
and Jackie Rogers Jr. would be a fake band.
Yeah.
They're not live, maybe not.
Because I think he just played it in his apartment.
So if this was like the Wikipedia, this would be like the. This would be
alternate
SNL
timelines.
SNL legends. Like, so this would not be canon.
The extended universe.
Yeah, the extended universe. It would not be the canon
right.
thing. So I just wanted to throw in Wikipedia for people who are playing bingo.
Now I got to go look up the Ed Grimley animated TV series and see if he played his triangle on there and in a professional capacity or not.
T-Mex says that like it's a challenge. Like something he
doesn't
I'm going to
come
do.
Back next week with so much Ed Grimley stuff, you're going to be sorry.
So to Jackie Rogers Jr., was there a real person who was Jackie Rogers Sr.?
No, he was another character for him.
Yeah, he actually played, Martin Short also played Jackie Rogers Sr., who was his dad, who was also a singer.
And they were both albinos, right?
No, Jackie Rogers Jr. was the albino. Jackie Rogers Sr. was normally colored, and he was like a Andy Williams type singer who was tragically mauled to death by a cougar while he was singing live Born Free on a TV special. So.
Was it tragic?
It sounds like it. Mostly on live TV.
Okay. So that was Jackie Rogers Sr.
Senior, and then his son Jackie Rogers Jr. picked up the microphone and carried on, as it were.
Well, wasn't there, maybe it's like Edgar Winter or someone, like loosely based on.
He's very Edgar Wintery looking. Yeah.
Was Edgar Winter an albino or just?
Yes. I think, I don't know if he's an albino, but he was very pale.
Very pale.
Yeah.
All white.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think he was.
Well, so, okay.
Because I don't know if I ever really got Jackie Rogers Jr. Like, he was funny to watch.
As a host, he was fantastic.
He was fantastic. But, like, the more you thought about it, the more confused I remember.
I think that's the part of the thing is, like, there's like a lot of things piled into this character that's not just like Nick the Lounge Singer, where he's just a schmarmy guy. You know?
That sketch, Jackie Rogers Jr., $100,000 jackpot, is one of my favorite sketches, and you cannot watch it now. Yeah. I mean, it is, you have Billy Crystal in blackface.
Oh God, I forgot about that.
Sammy Davis Jr.
And Christopher Guest is doing like a Indian character.
Very kind of effeminate.
Oh my God, you're right. Mean,
it's
very
like over the top, kind of just like.
My God, we were animals.
Yeah.
Wow.
I mean, it's still to this day very funny, but. No, you can't. I mean, there's no way you. Good luck trying to find it on TV or anything. They're just like.
I forgot about that.
Yeah. When you know, Billy Crystal.
Billy Crystal's gotten away pretty scot free from all the blackface.
With
he did
a lot of blackface.
He did a lot. He did his own Negro League thing.
Yeah, that's right. The Smelt Night.
He did Sammy Davis Jr.
He did a lot of Sammy Davis Jr. Yeah.
Speaking of which, he also did Fernando.
That's right.
Oh yeah,
I remember from the Latin American.
See, this is kind of an edge case because did he sing? You look
no,
marvelous.
I don't
is actually
think he
from
sang. It was from an album.
It was from his album, not from SNL.
Right.
No, he never sang. I don't think he ever sang as the character in the show. It was just a novelty song they came up with after
that
they
put
to
on
cash
a Billy
in.
Crystal album, not on a Fernando album.
So does he count?
You look marvelous. You know, my dear, my father used to say to me, Nando, don't be a schnook. It's not how you feel.
I count them from the album, but not from the show. Again, it's like the Wikipedia levels
What was Fernando's who was he?
Fernando Lamas.
Yes, he was a parody of a real person.
Okay,
was just this kind of smooth, kind of I know Hollywood.
I remember Fernando.
Debonair.
He's got American teeth and a Spanish mouth.
Ah.
From the song, I believe.
And it was more important to look good than to feel good.
I remember that.
And the song was marvelous.
You look marvelous. Absolutely marvelous.
So, yeah, I would think, I mean, I don't think he ever.
He doesn't count for SNL, but he did. He did have this, like,
there's a lot of that. Now, here's one that does count for SNL. This is Tyrone Green and his reggae band.
Amazing sketch.
Tyrone Green, you might remember from his poem, Kill My Landlord.
Oh, yeah, I remember him.
But when he got out, he had a reggae band that he played at the Veterans of Foreign Wars, their annual talent show. And they played their hit, Kill the White People.
Oh, I remember that. Yeah. At a VFW? That's
a pretty good Tim gag. Kazurinsky was the host of that.
Yes,
show.
He was.
Now, another one that I want to throw out there, because it's a fake band. It's a fake tribute band. Right. It's Alan, the Stevie Wonder Experience.
Okay, that's a...
Which is really clicked with me, largely because my name was in it. But yes, but this is a great one.
Yeah, you had Stevie Wonder playing Alan, the Stevie Wonder Experience, who was terrible at being Stevie Wonder. So Eddie Murphy would put on his sunglasses, and he would do a really good Stevie Wonder impersonation, and then Stevie Wonder, as Alan, the Stevie Wonder Experience, would try to copy him, and they would go back and forth until Stevie Wonder
basically an excuse for
blows it out and doesn't, you know, sings his like himself, and then he says, "Still sucks."
Yeah.
Well,
it was just basically a way to get Eddie Murphy to do
his impression of Stevie Wonder. It's probably the best use of a musical guest star in a skit on the show since John Belushi did his Joe Cocker impersonation with Joe Cocker.
It also still has this line that sticks in my head to this day where Joe Piscopo is an agent who's bringing in Alan, and he goes, "Did I get you, Willie Tyler? Did I get you, Lester?"
That's right.
Like they were two separate people. Yeah, no, that's good. Just cracks me up. Now, at this time of Saturday Night Live, though, there was also fake bands. There were musical guests.
Right.
And I have three of them here for you. One of them, of course, is Spinal Tap.
Oh, sure.
Oh, yeah.
Legendary.
And this was one of, this was it before the movie or right when the movie was coming out when they were?
This was like just after the movie. So they're getting some synergy trying to, you know, promote the music. And then the whole brilliant, you know, doing the Christmas song, like, I can't remember when the actual air date was, but it was like in the middle of spring or summer. So that was like another excellent gag layer they added.
And they also, that same group, Michael McKean, Christopher Guest, and Harry Shearer, they also performed as the Folksmen.
Wow, that early.
Yeah. This is like their first appearance, I believe. And it was just kind of a weird one-off thing, or so it seemed at the time.
What song did they sing?
Well, let's listen.
I can't hear any. Oh, that song. That was a banger. Well, what song was that?
Wasn't it Eat at Joe's? I think it was Eat at Joe's.
What song was it? I want to know. Do we know? Do we actually know what the song was? Or are we just going to figure it out? Team Mike, do you know?
Let's edit this out later and we'll...
Why it edit fantastic. It out? Fantastic.
We all love it.
They have a right to know.
And then, and there was a third one that did not have Christopher Guest or Michael McKean or Harry Shearer. It was Lily Tomlin.
Oh.
She did a character called Purvis Hawkins. She was the American musical guest. Purvis Hawkins was a black...
Marvin Gaye type person.
Yeah, Gaye kind of R&B singer.
Is she in blackface too?
Well, yes. No. She was not in blackface,
sort of,
but the lighting. Oh. They made the lighting. So, you know, it's okay. I mean, she wasn't in blackface, but they had the lighting, so maybe you could kind of think. And I'm just like, okay, that's fine. I guess. Seems wrong.
She may have made a call. Like, they may have offered to put her in blackface, and she declined for whatever reason.
Well, it'd
be nice to think that, yeah.
And while Billy Crystal said, like,
do it up.
Wow, yes, give me more.
And she wanted to.
Darker.
Billy Crystal used
up all the black makeup, so
there wasn't any left for Lily when she got there.
Well, though, yeah, so.
He's gotten away.
No, he got away totally scot-free.
Yeah, considering all the.
His reputation and completely intact.
It's tricky. Yes.
I mean, well, I'm not sure what he's done recently, but. I mean, yeah, okay.
I feel like he once did Sammy Davis Jr. with Sammy Davis Jr.
Oh, that might have
on
happened.
The show. Think. I don't know.
I have to look that up. That might be another great like musical guest sketch meeting themselves.
But thing. I think that impressions fit in because this is also they had a lot of impressions of this.
Oh, they
era.
Had been. Yeah. I mean, like we talked about with Joe Cocker and the first group and everything, there was Eddie Murphy did James Brown, Joe Piscopo did Frank Sinatra, there was a lot, but those, you know, great impressions, but like we said, the impressions aren't necessarily fake.
No,
bands,
I mean, right? you're portraying an actual real musician.
Right.
So, yeah. Just parodying them.
So well, that's 10 years. 10 years of SNL.
10 years, exactly. Woo. And at this point, once this season was over, the last season that had Billy Crystal and Martin Short in that group, they all left, and that's when, I believe...
Robert Downey Jr.,
the next cast comes in of Lorne Michaels coming in to start taking it all
was,
over.
Did Lorne Michaels take over at that point? Or was it?
I think so, but it might be that last year that maybe.
Because I did the main thing I remember, I mean, other than there was the beginnings of kind of the comeback there. But I remember, was it this season or is it the following season where they had everyone but, I think, Lovitz die in a fire?
It's the next season.
Next season, yeah.
Oh, right. I remember that.
It just was a little rough.
Yeah.
And they just cleaned house, and they basically, they set fire to the place, and they got John Lovitz in the
but
limo
it is weird,
out
like,
of there.
In light of like Chaplin and then, of course, all the Marvel movies, Robert Downey Jr. was, he was pretty troubled at this point, I think, but he was considered to be like a comedian, and Anthony Michael Hall too. And they were primarily like sketch comedians, really.
Exactly. That's a good stepping point for the episode we come back to when the Saturday Night Live. We'll go to that next decade, start with there, and then.
I can hardly wait.
We'll get to more of
when will it be coming up? Check our website and the schedule.
It'll be further on. We're not just going to upload all Saturday Night Live stuff. We're going to spread it out a little bit.
Oh, come on,
I mean,
Charles.
Seriously, we got so many fake bands to do.
Is this the new cruelty? Binge. Yes, we can't.
And obviously, we've got a little more research to do because we had a lot of questions asked that we had no answers for.
You should be ready for these questions.
Yeah, we're ready to go. What? I don't know where this started. I don't know.
What was the question that
you don't even know?
You asked a lot.
You should have researched it.
Well, I mean, like when it happened.
All of
this. Actually,
we thought we had a good list going.
Yeah. Oh, you know, I still want to know what folksman song they sang.
I'm pretty sure it's Eat at Joe's. Pretty sure. We made it through yet another episode of the Rock Peter Fake Bandicoot.
No thanks to our
special guest. We barely did, so you should be very proud of yourselves. I know we're proud of you. I also know that we are Alan Benson, T. Michael Childs, our special guest, Jason Torchinski. I'm Charles Rempel. Thanks for tuning in. Tell your friends about the podcast. Do the whole liking, whatnot. I don't care, but we'll see you next week.